WSLR-LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV-LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Ray Porter with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, August the 27th. More than 80 Sarasota city residents and business owners showed up at City Hall on Monday for what they thought would be an opportunity to voice their concerns over downtown parking issues. Instead, according to Suncoast Searchlight, the format for the advertised open house only allowed written comments on note cards, which frustrated and angered many who attended the session. A city flyer read that city officials would, quote, answer questions, unquote, and would, quote, receive public input to help foster an informed community discussion, unquote. The botched meeting brought months of simmering tensions over parking to a boil. Business owners claim city policies are driving customers to places like University Town Center, where parking is free. Most want visitors relieved of the parking costs, but the city's parking division is currently financially stressed and needs the money generated by fees to pay for projects like the recent $15.6 million St. Armand's parking garage. The parking division is categorized as an enterprise fund in the city budget, meaning it is supposed to be entirely self-sustaining through fees, citations, and permits. But recently, $1.2 million was required from the city's general fund to help pay down the division's debt. City Planning Director Steve Cover spent much of the Monday meeting answering shouted questions from those in attendance, almost entirely abandoning the original format intended for the session. Sarasota tourism numbers are up from last year at this time, a welcome sign for local businesses. The modest gains this year were shown in new data released by Visit Sarasota County. Visitation and direct spending continue to show year-over-year increases. Sarasota welcomed 156,000 visitors in July 2026, 12,000 more than in 2025. Visitor direct expenditures were more than $145 million, up $13 million from July 2025. Lodging occupancy was close to 61%, up 1% from 2025. The lodging average room rate was $303.28, up almost $20 from 2025. And there were 257,000 room nights sold, 15,000 more than in 2025. The death of country music icon Dolly Parton on Tuesday at 80 will be recognized by the state of Florida with the lowering of flags through Tuesday, September 1st across the state and the entire nation. That's in accordance with directives from President Donald Trump and Governor Ron DeSantis. Parton is a member of the Country Music and Rock Music Halls of Fame, in addition to being a popular actress and philanthropist. She died peacefully surrounded by family in Nashville, Tennessee, her publicist said in a statement. She was diagnosed with cancer shortly before her death. This has been Ray Porter with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, August the 27th.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Well, I was away last week. I missed a lot of excitement with the election. I did vote ahead of time. But with me today is Deb Hayes. We're going to be talking about the Sarasota County School Board race. Two of the district seats have been decided, but District 1 is going to a runoff. We're going to see Heidi Brandt and Jimmy Glover in the November race, and they're going to be running against each other for the District 1 seat. This is a seat being vacated by Bridget Ziegler. But Deb Hayes is with me today. She's a former Sarasota County School Administrator who never expected that she would be getting involved in local politics. She thought she'd be turning her attention to other things, but the happenings in Sarasota County Schools changed her mind. Deb, thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you for having me, Kathy. You're
okay.
Such a respected person. I'm honored.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. I have to tell you, the whole reason that I do this show is I want to give people who only get a few minutes at a dais to give their background, their point of view, what they care about. I want to give you an hour because,
Thank you.
Know, yeah, the thing about our form of government, democracy, of course we need elected officials that have integrity, that are going to work for the public. They need us to be engaged. We can't be sitting back assuming everything's fine.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think nothing showed that more than the changes we saw in Sarasota County schools. You know, I moved here back in 1999. I was looking at Florida, and Sarasota County was a standout.
Yes.
In terms of the quality of the schools. So, Deb, you worked in the school. Give us your background. You've worked in education. How long did you work in Sarasota County, and did you work anywhere else before you worked here?
Well, I have kind of an unusual background. I'm a nurse. I was prepared. Oh. I have a master's degree in nursing, but okay. I've always been in administrative and educational roles. I came to the district from what used to be Manatee Community College, mm-hmm. and I came to the district at what then was Sarasota County Vocational Technical Center as an assistant director in charge of all their health programs.
Okay.
From there, I went to the district office in terms of leadership of all of the vocational and technical programs in the district. And at that time, that was called Executive Director for Workforce Development. Mm-hmm. And in the roles that I had, there was so much going on in the 80s and 90s that brought awareness to the school district of just how it was involved in so many aspects of the community.
Yeah.
The HIV/AIDS epidemic was going strong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I became very involved in going across the district, teaching all of staff about bloodborne pathogen disease and trying to dispel some of the rumors and myths associated with HIV/AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a long way around saying I got to all parts of the district early
so
on.
You started when? What year?
I started in the district in 1987 and went to the district office in 1997.
Okay. All right. And you retired what year?
I retired in 2011.
Okay. So that's quite a long time. What is that, 20?
Nearly 25 years.
Yeah, 25 years. Okay. I find it interesting. I don't want to get down this road too far, but it must have been quite something to watch the COVID pandemic.
Yes.
With your background as a nurse,
yes.
and to see
yes.
how that was being handled, you know, statewide, countywide, in the schools. Any thoughts on that?
I think as a nurse, I was absolutely terrified of what was happening.
Mm.
And I think at the national level, when we were almost pretending it did not exist, was again terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I think the local district operated really, really well in terms of using scientific data from the CDC as it was changing
right.
to make decisions.
Yeah.
And people don't have a full appreciation of just how fast information was coming in and changing.
It was a totally new disease.
It was a totally new disease, and it was spreading rapidly, and it was killing lots of people.
Mm.
So when I looked from afar at the district, I saw a district handling it very appropriately. I think
mm-hmm.
Dr. Asplin did, from my external perspective, a wonderful job of trying to maintain calm,
mm-hmm.
keeping people safe, and trying to adjust to not having students in the classroom all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And these were all things that were so unknown and so different, just to maintain some stability, I thought was very, very admirable.
Yeah, and that was the rise of Moms for Liberty,
right?
Right? And I remember it was a video with Alexis Beagleman, who was the president of Moms for Liberty at that time, and Melissa Bicondi on social media actually planning to cause disruption in schools over masks.
Yes.
And they thought it was funny.
Yeah.
That they were engineering some kind of protest over masks. But the thing that really struck me, and Bicondi is a nurse.
Yes, I know.
And her husband is a radiologist, which, you know, a doctor, which some doctors might say, well, that's not really a doctor.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. But they have a medical background. So, you know, and I know even there's a cohort of healthcare professionals at SMH that took issue with some of the recommendations around COVID. But the Moms for Liberty launchpad was the COVID pandemic, and they particularly, their rhetoric around masks, calling them face diapers, it was just so, well, I thought irresponsible and ignorant, you know, because a new disease, a lot of people think medicine is just A plus B plus C, you know, equals D, like it's cut and dried. That's not the reality, is it?
It's not the reality. And at that point in our history, we were dealing with something very, very different.
Yeah.
And I think we have, with our moving ahead in so many ways, we have forgotten people were dying very, very difficult death.
Oh, yeah. My dad died in May of 2020 alone.
Yes.
You know, alone in a hospital. Yes, he had comorbidities, but it was not the kind of goodbye that any of us thought we would have with him.
Well, I guess that's what kind of sparked my awareness that something was going on in public education.
Yes.
That I was not expecting nor had any I didn't even have the words.
I didn't have a template to figure out. I don't know.
I don't even know the words. I guess I was overwhelmed and incredulous that people could raise an issue of a mask when people were dying.
Yeah.
I thought, couldn't we find something else to argue about? You know, like trying to keep people safe. And so I guess that was my entree back into public education of saying something isn't right here. This is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So at that time, you know, I track certainly things that year and the pandemic, really changed things. But I kind of track the beginning of what was going awry or off track with the Sarasota County School Board back to the election of Bridget Ziegler in 2014. And it was the first race in Sarasota County history where you saw dark money being given to a PAC to support a local candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, Citizens United happened in 2010 in Manatee County. I think Joe McClash was unseated in 2012 with just outright lies from PACs that were saying that, you know, he was supporting President Obama, but he's a Republican, just things that weren't true. And he lost his seat. He lost his seat to Betsy Banack, who ironically years later, you know, organized this Take Back Manatee from the developers. So things have a way of coming around. But with Bridget Ziegler getting that seat, without that $42,000 that was put into this PAC to support her, I don't know that she would have won. I think that was pretty decisive support. And then when she came on board, you know, she was definitely in a minority, but it was the beginning of this coalition of school board members around the state. Tiffany Justice was part of that. Tina Deskovich, like the three founders of Moms for Liberty. Erica Donalds was on the school board. So you saw kind of the hatching of this movement with now, you know, Byron Donalds running for governor. Erica Donalds is like the fourth Moms for Liberty founder, if you ask me.
And I was listening to Erica Donalds last night. And her pride in taking public money for her private ventures and her success with charter schools, although I am not.
I put that in quotes. She was putting a charter school together, and right before the beginning of school, the whole thing you know, went into the crapper. It wasn't going to happen. And all these kids had, you know, their parents had to scramble to put their children into a different school. It's like educating's hard. It's not such an easy thing. And Ms. Donalds, if she was so great, why did she have to, you know, trash her project before it even happened? That was quite something. But she does profit, to your point, from curricula. And I believe there's online curricula that she offers, her business offers. And, you know, that may meet the needs of certain parents. But there's a question as to whether or not that type of privatization is actually in the public interest.
Well, there's only so many dollars. And I think ideologically, one can support school choice in many, many different forms and think that's a wonderful thing. But the money to support those ventures comes from a single pot. And Florida has long known that we're going to see some real budget shortfalls in the next several years. And over the last several years, as more and more tax dollars have gone to support private ventures, and including parochial, the teaching of religion ventures, there's less and less ability for public schools to grow and do the kind of innovative things that they would love to do given the resources. So it's like, from my medical background, it's like starving a patient and then asking him to get up and run a marathon. Yeah. You know, it's just incompatible. It's just totally incompatible. So I think people are beginning to notice you just can't do this in a sustainable way. It's just not going to happen.
You know, there's reasons to aggregate resources. Like the public sector, people for many years had this kind of battle cry of run it like a business. And there's certainly a place for competition in the business world. The reality these days is actually we do have a lot of corporate welfare, that government giving money to business. That's kind of what's happening with charter schools because they don't have to abide by the same standards as public schools. They can cherry pick their students. They often set up a private corporation which handles their real estate assets and a separate corporation, that nonprofit, that is for running the school. That real estate corporation can charge up to 40% of the school board's budget for the lease for the building. And then what happens is those leases are bundled and sold as real estate investment trust, financial derivative instruments. The most reliable payer, if you're, you know, in a business, is, if you ask any doctor around here, what's your most reliable payer? It's Medicare. It's the government. And so Wall Street is aware of that. This is a way to tap into school board budgets. It's a way to siphon money, exorbitant amounts of money. This, you know, the typical amount of money used in a school board budget toward the physical building is like 13%. So when you're charging 40, you literally are taking money off the table from education, and they're not meeting the needs of special needs kids. And they're, you know, they're not demonstrating better outcomes. They're just simply picking kids that are easier to teach. That's very different than what a public school does.
I need to be really clear here in my particular personal feelings. I think there's a very, very, very big difference in charter schools that are what we used to refer to as moms and pops. These are not managed by for-profit companies. They are what we have in Sarasota, like Sarasota Military Academy, Sarasota School of Arts and Sciences, Student Leadership Academy, Dreamers Academy, really, really, really good schools.
Homegrown.
Held to the same public standards as any traditional school, but they don't have the the corporate, what I call greed,
mm-hmm.
and the real estate interests that you were talking about.
Yeah.
And I think people get real confused. And mm-hmm. when we talk about charter schools, not all charter schools created equal.
I appreciate you making that distinction. I typically am careful and want that distinction made every time, because it isn't the Julie Rohr Academy. It isn't the Sarasota School of Arts and Science that operates this way. It's corporate charter school chains that are looking to, you know, make
their
real
estate holdings better.
Yeah, they're like franchises.
Yeah.
And they'll put a kid in a uniform, and I think uniforms have lots of benefits. I can see why parents like that. I can definitely see why parents would like, you know, a new facility, because they're typically a new facility. All that looks good, but you must look closer than that.
Yeah.
And the reality is a lot of these schools don't actually perform the way you would expect. So getting back to this school board race, because obviously we're talking about state issues, and it's really important that this understanding permeate every level of government as to what's best for our kids with public education, our society, our economy, right? Tell me about your work in the local election, this local election, because I think these decisive victories may have been a surprise. I know nationally, I was out of state and in Virginia, and there was a woman I was having dinner with. She didn't know I was from Sarasota, and she brought it up.
Yeah.
She said, I just read that this happened in Sarasota County, that, you know, the old guard, the Moms for Liberty people are leaving the school board. They were voted out. You worked on that, didn't you, with
Support
Our Schools?
I worked, I worked with a number of different organizations. I kind of consider myself a freelancer because I really am supportive of a lot of organizations that are looking to make things better mm-hmm. for all students, all parents. So I'm involved with Support Our Schools. I'm involved with Sea Alliance. I'm involved with Equality Florida, Immigration Justice Coalition.
Mm.
Sure, lots of organizations mm-hmm. that are working in concert, but in different areas to make things better for our kids and our community.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I saw in this election. I saw people from across political lines mm-hmm. really fed up with nonsense going on in school board meetings that had no benefit for students.
Yeah.
I sat in many, many school board meetings watching students present their case, present their feelings, present their tears mm-hmm. to the board, and have the board majority just ignore or even worse, demean them.
Yeah, that's really bad.
And I'm not the only one that mm-hmm. saw that. Other people were seeing that. And so mm-hmm. I think I was thrilled with the results mm-hmm. of the election, because I think Megan and Beth had, even through their campaigns, were not politicizing their role at all.
Yeah.
It was just, what can we do to make things better for teachers, students, parents, and the community? And I think the race will be determined in November, the final school board race. I think, again, I've seen Jimmy Glover particularly not politically affiliated, just wanting to make things better for kids. And so when you have a board that has people of different beliefs, of different backgrounds, all coming together saying, we're not promoting a political agenda, we are promoting what's best for kids. How could we lose?
Yeah, so true. So as I look at the results and what's coming in November, were you involved with any campaigning at all, or were you simply advocating?
I did campaign. I campaigned in a nonpartisan way to get out the vote.
Okay.
people were not aware that there was a school board final election associated with what they thought was the primary.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a lot of work. Sea Alliance did a lot of work helping mm-hmm. the people understand that
there was an election.
There was an election. Mm-hmm. And not only was it a final election, or could be a final election for school board, but that people could vote across party lines, across district lines mm-hmm. for three races in the county. And that was really something many, many people did not know. So I thought that was very effective.
It's always an effort. That August election is always a school board election. And typically, you know, if somebody gets 50% of the vote, it's over.
Yes.
So you don't know what's going to happen. And if you want to weigh in on who's going to be on the school board, you must vote in August.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We also had a open primary in the Sarasota County Commission race, District 2, where everybody could vote.
Yes.
Which is rare. They're usually, if you don't have a legitimate candidate from the other party, there's usually a write-in candidate to close the Republican primary. So that was quite something.
It was a very different election mm-hmm. In August. And you asked if I did campaigning for candidates. Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I saw the best candidates in Beth and Megan.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to have an R or a D by their name. They just were the best candidates for our.
They had both given a lot of their time to public education.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you know, Ms. Mayberry, she was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Megan Tenneman had been a volunteer, and I believe a teacher also.
Yeah, she had been a teacher also at Gosia.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. So having that kind of experience is important, very helpful. But tell me, Deb, as an administrator, I want to go back a little bit to your experience in Sarasota County Schools, and you actually worked with Robin Marinelli, who will be leaving in November. So I'm very curious to hear your take on your experience working with Ms. Marinelli versus, you know, the board, watching the board function and how she worked on the board. But it seemed to me like when my kids were in school in the early aughts, you know, the early 2000s, there just wasn't any of this drama at all. And the schools were very respected.
Well, in my 25 years at the school district, I could not have told you the political party of any of the school board members.
Okay.
It was almost verboten to even talk about politics because it was, they were nonpartisan races. They were nonpartisan individuals. The positions were nonpartisan. So I wouldn't have been able to tell you what political party any of the school board members were. And there was a respect between staff and the board that we were all working together in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned I was working with Robin. I did work with Robin for many years at the school district and consider her a friend.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see some of the things that I saw as a board member that she supported. I don't think I would have predicted that. So those were kind of those were difficult moments for me.
Yeah, I think, well, in terms of Robin Marinelli, she to me was a persuadable member of the board majority, who I appreciated a lot of the votes where, like Vermillion Education, where she rejected this untested, unproven Hillsdale College affiliated curriculum consultant, which completely looked like a political maneuvering. And, you know, she said no to it. I believe Tim and Enos did too, which was pretty critical for us. There were charter school decisions that she was you know, more amenable to a moderate point of view. But, you know, honestly, I was disappointed that somebody who spent so much time as an educator, who spent so many years, could be what appeared to me, and I, you know, it may not, I'm sure other people feel differently, as, you know, being manipulated by a political agenda that, you know, she was serving. I thought it was really unfortunate that she was photographed with Proud Boys, you know, who were celebrating their election. I just thought, wow, okay, not what I expected.
Well, I look forward to the time after all of this is kind of over and Robin is no longer on the school board to just having some friendship.
Yeah. You know, we were talking before the show, we're in a political time. It's pretty rare that people don't have friends or family that have a different political viewpoint.
Absolutely.
And we have to learn how we're going to navigate conversations with these folks. Sometimes maybe it's the best thing, just, you know, talk about football and the weather at Thanksgiving, right? But to the extent that we can, these conversations are important, you know.
They are. And I think this last election of the school board pointed out to me that people are ready for that kind of conversation. Mm-hmm. Now, since then, there's been social media, what I call crazy talk, you know, using derogatory terms. I don't even know what a libtard is, but I think it's a derogatory term about liberals.
Oh, it's definitely derogatory. Yes.
Well, but those kinds of things, you know, being thrown at the fact that we have Megan and Beth on the school, will be on the school board. I mean, that's silly stuff. That is just silly stuff.
Oh, gosh. I got to tell you, though, in my family, so, you know, conservative Irish Catholic family. I'm the oldest of five. My younger brother, Jimmy, he was talking to one of my aunts. And I mean, I would say we're pretty moderate, right? And he said to me, Kathy, I didn't know I was a libtard. We laughed. I'm like, what's happening? You know,
I'm learning new vocabulary that I never knew before. Uh-huh. I think the election to me said people want to get back to doing the right thing for kids and not to let the distractions just keep dominating. And the distractions have completely dominated the last
several
years.
A lot of it isn't even true.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some of this stuff is just manufactured. If you're going to go after, if you know, there's certainly Mr. Ziegler studies this for a living, and he has a company that targets or micro-targets people online to persuade them about politics. That's his work. So if you're going to move somebody to vote or to take a position, the easiest places to go are their religion and their kids, right? These are the things that people hold close. I think to intentionally agitate people over these things, especially in a dishonest way, it's one thing to have a talk about where people's differences are and how to respect, how to make room for people's legitimate differences in ways that don't hurt anyone, right? But it's quite another to make claims of, you know, about bathrooms and what's going to happen, you know, if we let trans kids use a bathroom. I think it just went so far in an unreasonably divisive direction. And the humanity of these folks, in some ways on both sides, but it seemed more heavily, you know, like the Moms for Liberty game was to dehumanize kids on the left. And I just thought, wow, how do you do that? What's the point of that?
Well, I think the dehumanization we're seeing in a lot of areas, and it's building on fears that are not realistic, but they're meaningful to the person who's fearful.
Sure.
If someone doesn't know a lot about transgenderism and they're being told that schools are converting children, then I guess people that don't know a lot about it could believe that.
Yeah.
People that are being told that migrants are eating cats or whatever talk du jour is, without really questioning that and not knowing the facts, people get irrationally upset, and then that irrationality precludes any dialogue at that point. So
when you look at this upcoming runoff, you're looking at, so it's District 1.
Correct.
And Jimmy Glover, father of four, his kids have gone through Sarasota County Schools. I think his oldest just graduated.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And then Heidi Brand, she's got a daughter who, went to Southside.
Yes, ma'am.
Elementary. So PTA president, she's been really involved. But what kind of research have you done? What kind of things have you seen that you would suggest people look at?
Well, I haven't personally done the background checking, but the information that I have been looking at is some of the things in Ms. Brandt's background that she doesn't talk about. She definitely was involved with Moms for Liberty, and she definitely had a business with what I'm told is sexting or things that would be uncomfortable for me in a classroom.
So I was not aware of the Moms for Liberty connection. Can you share about that? And then we'll talk about the other thing too. But
yes, she has been a Moms for Liberty member since 2021.
Okay.
And the last that I'm aware of was that they were, she was still a member as of 2025. But she hasn't talked about that on the campaign trail, nor has she talked about her business backgrounds and other things that are coming up, which could have a significant impact on the way the general public views the school board. I'm very supportive of Jimmy Glover for a number of reasons. I think District 1 has the richest of the rich and the poorest of the poor.
Yeah.
And I think he's able to, from a demographics perspective, understand the needs of the poorest of the poor in our district. And he is a new town resident. He understands the needs of those students probably better than most of us. And he doesn't, again, have a political agenda other than to help students, families, and the community succeed. And for me, to have him be the first person of color on Sarasota County School Board would be an amazing, amazing addition to our school board.
I've had Mr. Glover on the show, and I've had Ms. Brandt on the show. I've actually know they're friendly with Heidi and her husband, or fiance. I think they're married now. But you know, the thing that's strange in that regard, which, I'll invite Heidi on again and we can talk about it, is there is a lawsuit out there between her and the ex-wife's husband. So her husband now, Jerry, was married before. His ex-wife's current husband, they're in this litigation, Heidi. So the second spouses are in defamation litigation. And it's in the state of New York. And on the docket are references. Well, it's documentation of a business showing Ms. Brandt's affiliation with this business. And to your point, it was it's called Pleasure Texting LLC, and it was basically buying emojis.
Oh.
You could buy these emojis, and these emojis have images that are of a 50 Shades of Grey type deal, which, you know, you wouldn't expect that somebody who was doing that would run for school board.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can, I'm sure we'll be talking about that. There's going to be more discussions about that probably in this race, I think, because some of the images are concerning. Just, there's one showing a woman with a dog collar on, and I'm just like, well, that's not really an image that I think is consistent with uplifting girls or women. So,
well, I think the school board is made up of individuals, and in those individuals are certainly not perfect in any sense
of course,
but they do represent what I believe the community wants in terms of a respectable body with sustainable, or I hate to use the word morality because I think that's a really
nobody's perfect.
Yeah, nobody's perfect.
But there's kind of a, you want kind of a wholesome, like we all fall down, but to be profiting off of something that is
hurtful.
Derogatory.
Yeah.
In terms of how women are seen.
Yeah.
I think that requires some explanation.
I agree with you. And I think that's the thing that has not happened with candidate forums that have occurred during that election cycle. Those are the kinds of things that just were not addressed and have, I think, caused a great deal of concern in the community that people are almost wondering, what else? What else?
Well, we don't want a 2.0 situation.
No, we don't.
We've been surprised before, right? And the thing is, so let's talk about that a little bit. You know, one of the tactics with extreme ideology, I guess you could say, is just exploiting norms.
Yes.
You know, driving a truck through these norms that, or just flattening norms that people have relied on, right? An appropriate sense of shame. Like, oh, I messed up, I should step down. With Bridget Ziegler, I think people assume, because they're not following really closely, that when the whole throuple threesome thing came on the scene, that somehow it had been mitigated, or, you know, it's their business to an extent. Although the behavior described, if you're out in Sarasota bars sending your husband who's taking surreptitious photos with the women not knowing they're being photographed and sending them back to the wife for approval as to whether or not the two of you want to be involved with this person, I have to ask, how do you know you're not, you shouldn't be doing that with anyone, number one. How do you know you're not photographing a teacher?
Yeah.
I mean, these are young women who go out, right?
Yeah.
They go out too. How do you know that your potential, do you have a screening process? I mean, it's just so dehumanizing because here you are in a quote unquote committed relationship and you're inviting somebody else in who you're not going to have any commitment to. I mean, nothing meaningful. This person is there for your entertainment. And, you know, you're doing that in Sarasota. Is a pretty small town.
It's a very small town
How do you think this isn't going to get out? Number one. So the whole judgment factor, but I just look at it and go, because she would not step down. She just refused. And this is the MO. I'm going to stay. You can't make me leave. We don't have a mechanism. And maybe we need to have one to recall, you know, not over nothing, but something like this is not nothing. And I think this election was, you know, a referendum on that as much as anything.
I think that's, you're absolutely correct in that. And from a broader perspective, it was, again, a huge distraction from the business of the board.
Yeah.
While all of this distraction over the last several years about ICE resolutions and eliminating enumerated protections for our minority students, the district was not garnering the support of the entire community to say we need to deal with the state who is underfunding, under-supporting, and undermining the work of public education.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And there's a growing group of people. And again, I mentioned some of the organizations that I work with. But it goes even beyond that in terms of people who are saying, where do I belong, to start saying Sarasota schools are great. They are wonderful, but they're underfunded.
Mm-hmm.
Dramatically underfunded. And when you look comparatively across the nation,
oh yeah,
Florida is at dead bottom in mm-hmm. teacher pay and almost dead bottom in the expenditures that we have for student per student. It's not good.
No.
It is not good.
No.
But I think what happened with the election and the positivity that I'm feeling in the community, mm-hmm. I think we have a wonderful opportunity to be a chart the course.
Yeah, to
of
be
the
a
state.
Beacon.
Yes,
yeah.
To be a beacon.
Well, and that's what a lot of people come to Sarasota for. You know, people with families. I was one of them saying, okay, because quite frankly, you know, growing up in the Northeast, and my kids had gone to Montgomery County schools in the D.C. area when their dad was doing a residency at Walter Reed. That's one of the best school systems in the nation. So I was hesitant about moving to Florida. It was only because we were moving to Sarasota. I was like, okay, this school system looks good. But to your point, top in the state, when the state is not so great, we can still improve. And it's only to the extent that people are not paying attention that this kind of stuff can happen. Yeah. So it's very good to see that voters are engaged and they are paying attention and they want to see the quality come back, you know.
I agree. And I think one of the things that I would like to dispel just from my personal perspective, the board majority changing does not mean that all of those board members think exactly alike.
Right.
I think that's the absolute joy that I see. Tom and Liz don't think exactly alike. Beth and Megan don't think exactly alike. There's going to be a rich community to dialogue with the community as well as within the board. And I'm thrilled with that. I think it's just going to be no groupthink. It's same values, but really coming at problems from very different perspectives. And I'm delighted about that.
Yeah. I thought it was great to see how SRQ United, these parents came together over Wilkinson Elementary.
Yes.
And in the state of Florida, the Schools of Hope program basically looks at underutilized buildings, classroom space, schools where, you know, you've got declining enrollment, and allows charter schools to come in and utilize this space on the public dime. I thought Sarasota County under Terry Connor did just an excellent job of looking for efficiencies to close those openings, because the Schools of Hope track record, I always point to Jefferson County.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And Jefferson County had the entire school district went under the Schools of Hope program. It was like one of the first. Their third grade reading scores had typically been in the 42% range, definitely underperforming. 42% proficiency for third graders. So you've got a K through 12 campus. It's a rural county. It's a small school system that went entirely charter. It went with Academica. What did that mean? It meant they couldn't cherry pick kids. Yeah. They had to take everybody. And when they had to take everybody, they all had the nice uniform. They had the new facilities. You know, some of the performance stayed flat. There might have been some improvement, but third grade reading proficiency. And this was Richard Corcoran's baby.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Richard Corcoran, I agree with him that third grade reading proficiency is a very important metric. You want to get kids reading by third grade. Doesn't mean things are over if they're not, but that's kind of the test, or it's the line where most kids are reading by third grade. They have differences in their development, but most of them are reading by third grade. So this was his project. This was his baby. They took Jefferson County schools. What happened was the third grade reading scores went from 42% to 19. It was horrible. Yeah. It was a horrible drop. Now, COVID was in there.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're supposed to be ahead of the curve, this is a small district.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think they had the same kind of COVID challenges as other schools, but a 19% drop just blows a hole into this idea that somehow corporate charters are the answer.
Yeah.
I was just shocked by that data. I think everybody in Florida should know it. And, you know, the main thing being, charter school performance, from where I sit, is heavily dependent on their cherry picking.
There's
students.
Absolutely some of that that goes on. And I would just point out the Schools of Hope are, that legislation never changed. It never died. It had the opportunity to be certainly amended in the last legislative session, and it was not done.
Well, you got to look at how many donors are affiliated with corporate charters. There's a bunch. Go ahead.
And Academica, that you mentioned, is now going into the private school market because the vouchers would allow them not to have to have all of the regulations that even a charter school has. So,
so they want to be completely free of any accountability.
So those issues are out there. They are real. They are tremendous threats to public education. And Sarasota is not immune to those threats. And I think we just have to all come together as a community and find ways to encourage our Florida legislators to do the right thing and not let corporate greed rule what we're doing.
So what do you recommend, Deb? You didn't foresee your involvement. You got off the retirement, you know, lounge chair and decided I have to get involved because you saw what was happening. For somebody who cares and wants to pitch in, do what they can to improve public education, what do you suggest? How should they start?
I think, first of all, keep aware of what's going on at the school board. I think the ability to watch school board meetings online is very helpful. A number of organizations that I've mentioned support our schools, Sea Alliance, some of the social justice organizations throughout the community, all are places where people could find a niche to be able to help public education should they want to do that. And it can be anything. It could be working on an election campaign. It could be volunteering in the schools.
Yeah.
And that is a big mission. I know that both Beth and Megan are working on and support our schools, mm-hmm. actually offered a $10,000 donation to the district for the cost of fingerprinting for volunteers.
So, yeah,
lots of opportunities.
Okay. Well, Deb, I want to thank you for joining me today. And the next election is going to be in November. There's going to be a lot of races at the top of the ballot.
Yeah.
But there are going to be important local races at the bottom. And one of them is the District 1 Sarasota County School Board race.
Yes.
That's going to be important. It is a nonpartisan race.
Yeah.
So for that election, everybody, if you want to check on your voter registration, go to sarasotavotes.gov or votemanatee.gov and have a look at your voter registration. Make sure it's accurate. You can get a mail-in ballot for that race. You can check your precincts and, you know, get involved in whichever local race, supporting a candidate, learning about the candidates. It's all so important. So, Deb, now that you're, are you going to be in this for the home stretch?
I can't stop now. And so, I'll be in here for the long run. And I would encourage people to begin thinking outside of the box in terms of just not all R's and D's.
Yes.
Look at people who represent the values that they espouse.
Yeah, because I had written a piece a while ago, and it was how I voted Republican the very first time I voted. And I feel like there's a huge difference between the Republican Party back in the 80s versus now. And this was actually, I wrote this piece back in like, I don't know, 2010, 2012. Mm-hmm. And my point was, sometimes the best quote unquote Republican is a Democrat.
Yes. I agree with you.
It's just not, you just can't look at a label. You have to know who they are. You have to know what they stand for. So everybody, thanks so much for listening. You've been listening to The Detail on WSLR, 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1. LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.
Squeaks and closes too tight. I got some special oil bin. Make everything fit just so. When your lock is slow and turning, or just get me on the line. I got a mask to keep mom. And it's guaranteed to work every time. I'm ready for you, baby. I'm said I'm ready for you, sure no. The handyman people, when they call Mr. Maximum Touch, and with all of my fingers, and with both of my thumbs, and with my whole body, babe, I'm always ready when you're ready. Are you ready to come around and see me, honey? Keep on coming and coming and coming around. Check it out, baby, baby, look at here. I got a mouth, I got a tongue, something else that's well hungry for you, baby. Yeah, I say well hungry for you.